Radio Network.
It's just not enough. Oh, my loving God. Can't get enough of your love, babe.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out from the Chinese Academy of Science, that's similar to our National Academy of Science, traditional Chinese medical herb, ginseng, can offer new anti-obesity strategy. That's good news, considering how many Americans are overweight or obese. And that's just the beginning of a lot of quality information, always from peer-reviewed journals, always from respected institutions, and almost never reported in the mainstream media. Maybe it's just not sexy enough for them. But it's important here. Also today, we'll be continuing with our ongoing series of original investigative reports challenging the legitimacy of the skeptics who control virtually all of the complementary and alternative medicine. But today, a completely different approach. The title of today, Senior Wikipedia Editors Recommend That the Site Be Euphonized. Well, that sounds interesting. And it's a top, long-term, almost from the beginning, editor, one of the most powerful people in all of Wikipedia, saying it should be euphonized? Why isn't this up for debate in the mainstream media? Why has no one touched this topic? We will on today's program. Also today, we will take a look at the State Department documents connecting Hillary Clinton and Gloria Nuland and to the Steele dossier, the Ukraine and Libya. Plus, corporate news media repeats CIA propaganda on Bolivia. Why wasn't the Bolivian coup mentioned once in U.S. participation in it in support of over 80 different regime changes since World War II, and we should stop it? Not a word from any of the candidates. Oh, there is one, Tulsi Gabbard, doesn't want us interfering in other people's elections. And to his credit, Bernie Sanders actually said, though he supports Israel, he supports Palestinians' rights too. But that's kind of a toothless statement. Show you mean it. Stop the support for Israel and don't allow any support till they come to the table and work out a two-state solution that allows the Palestinian people to live with some dignity and harmony. But I don't think anyone's running for president is going to suggest that. We have a lot to share, and that's where we begin, always with the latest on health and healing. So if you're overweight or you're obese and you become a severe public health problem around the world, current anti-obesity strategies are mainly, according to Chinese Academy of Sciences, aimed at restricting caloric intake and absorption. Now, Chinese scientists suggested a new study about burning energy by activation of brown adipose tissue might be an alternative strategy for combating obesity. The researchers found that an extract of ginseng, a traditional Chinese medicine herb, can induce enterococcus, which can produce an unsaturated long-chain fatty acid, an MA is called, and that can help the body burn fat. So, but just in lay language, ginseng is good for reducing fat. Also from the Chinese Medical University and Hospital, green tea attenuates microglial inflammation and neurotoxicity. Well, that sounds a little complicated. It isn't. I'll simply simplify it. Reporting in the news, it's been investigating whether the neuroprotective, meaning that which protects your neurons in your brain, and your central nervous system, can be done with EGCG, epigallocatechin 3 gallate, or green tea. And it's mediated by inhibition of Kennecal and non-Kennecal inflammatory activation. So what they did in this study, they took a look at everything from their National Science Foundation and the Science Research Fund, and they said, let's go in there and see, is green tea able to turn off inflammation or reduce inflammation in the brain and the central nervous system? And the answer was yes, it does work. Now, here is a theory that I would like to suggest people pay attention to. When you have cancer, you're generally given surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. If you survive, the therapy is given 100% of the credit. That's not scientific. For example, if you're given the flu vaccine and you don't come down with the flu, they automatically give the credit to the flu vaccine. They shouldn't. It's completely unscientific. You don't know what a person has done during that season. And by the way, there is no such thing as flu season. Flu can happen any time during the 12 months. But let's just say that you live in Florida. So you spend more time outside in the winter because it's in the 70s and 80s and very comfortable. You're getting more vitamin D. You're exercising. You don't have the forced heat on, which can dry out the mucous membranes in the lungs and the nasal cavities, causing a bacterial overgrowth, which leads to infection. You're drinking more citrus, more orange juice, grapefruit juice, because it's in season then. Maybe that you're a person just taking more vitamin C or vitamin A. So you see, none of these things is considered. It's just a blanket propaganda. And that's unfortunate. It shouldn't be that way. But there are thousands of studies on green tea. And they've studied green tea in cancer. It works. And remember, when you take chemotherapy, and some want you to take chemotherapy, like they want you to take statins, they want you to take antipsychotic medication, they want you to take antidepressants in order to prevent a condition. That's how insane it is. And none of that works, because if you take chemotherapy, you'll come down with cancer. If you take radiation, you'll come down with cancer. If you take antipsychotic medication, you can come down with psychoses. And the same with depression. The very first side effect on the package insert is frequently depression as a side effect of the antidepressant drug. It altogether changes when you use something natural, non-toxic. So if you're taking vitamin C and it reduces the incidence of cold, that is reasonable to expect then that it would help prevent that which you can reverse if it's natural. So by taking vitamin C, you can help prevent a cold. By taking vitamin C, you can lessen the duration of cold. By taking echinacea, you can prevent cancer or prevent inflammation in the brain. And if you have inflammation in the brain, taking green tea can help reduce it. That's the difference in two extremely different models of healing. The allopathic one that is taught, and I really have to suggest mistaught, versus the natural approach to disease, which historically was the only way that we approached disease. Now, mind you, in the history of medicine, there had been some very foolish notions and nostrums. You know, there was cocaine and there was opium and there was heroin and there was mercury. You had all these ideas that somehow this would help people and it hurt people. But you also had, even back in the 1800s, Dr. Kellogg. Yeah, he was the brother. There were two brothers, and they founded Kellogg's cereal company. But the one today would be considered a leading proponent of holistic medicine. He had his clinics where people juiced. They didn't have electric juicers, but they had hydraulic presses. They would put on beets and celery and cucumbers and carrots, and they would push this press down. And I've done this. I actually built a press up in Goshen. There was an orchard, and the older gentleman who owned it really wasn't harvesting. And so I said, well, could I take all your downs, which means those that have fallen on the ground? I'm going to do an experiment. So there are photographs of this up on my website. If you want to see this, you'll see me and Bib Oberhaus and buddy of mine, Neil Crame, and I. We would take all the apples. We would take all morning collecting the apples. Then we'd put them in a big tub and spray them down and clean them. They were all organic. Nothing had been sprayed. And then we put them into a machine that churn them up, cut them up like a high-speed industrial food processor, till it was a mash. Pumice is called. Then we would take this muslin cloth and put it on, wrap it up, and put it on a plate, and there'd be like 7 to 10 of these plates. And then you just pressure with your foot on this metal plate, and down came this big heavy press, and the juice would squirt out and go into a funnel, and the funnel would go into a 55-gallon stainless steel drum, and then we had a little knob on that, and then just put it under a gallon and fill it up and smack a label on it and took it down to farmers markets in Fairway. My friend was one of the owners of Fairway, Dave, and he said, keep bringing them, as many as you can bring. People love this stuff, fresh apple cider from organic apples. It was the first that I knew of that was being sold in New York. By the way, we brought the first organic produce into New York City, grew it up in Goshen. By the way, beautiful up there. In any case, the idea was that do something that will help people when they're sick. You give them some apple cider with apple cider vinegar and lemon juice and echinacea and royal jelly and bee propolis and olive leaf extract, and you put it all together and you blend it up and drink it down. And it is one of the best tonics in the world for a cold or flu. But also, everything I just mentioned can help prevent a cold and flu. So the notion that we should be doing something preventatively that we can also do, let's say, with functional medicine, meaning a food or herb or nutrient, a juice that has a function that helps our body. Just something to think about. Anyhow, that is not, unfortunately, that is not taught in nothing in the way of natural healing and psychosomatic medicine and epigenetics is really not taught to medical students, who I believe the vast majority are young idealists until they're into the system and then overwhelmed by the complexities of how much everyone else has a say in what they should practice. The state medical boards, which are controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, the AMA, and the publications, the continuing education credits, and the basic curriculum. Where's there any room in there for innovation and not becoming a part of the orthodox status? Now, I would absolutely support the orthodox status if you had cure rates for all the major diseases and you have no cure rates for the major diseases. Abysmal failure with chronic illness. So maybe it's time, after so many people have died and been injured, tens of millions dead over the last 50 years just using orthodoxy, maybe there ought to be a little less arrogance, a little more humility, and someone raise their hand and says, maybe making $3.5 trillion a year and having all these dead bodies piled up, over a million dead using just our therapies, and yet we have a whole crusade against alternative and natural doctors who actually save lives. Maybe we've got it wrong. Yeah, I just haven't seen those hands going up yet. From Stanford University, there comes a study about the omega-3 fatty acids and the health benefits. And this is something that we're trying to prove right now. In fact, in just 3 days, we'll have our first phase of our study, anti-aging study, over, and everybody will be getting the blood work. I'm trying to see, and it's a hypothesis, is it possible to create stem cells in older people that are younger stem cells? They say no. I say, let's test it. And that's what we're doing, and that's why they're taking 15 glasses of juice a day, and they're taking very high doses of omega-3 fatty acids. Well, guess what Stanford University just found? Let me quote this. Quote, for years, researchers have known that deficits in an ancient cellular antenna called the primary cilium are linked with obesity and insulin resistance. Now, researchers at Stanford University School of Medicine have discovered that this strange little cellular appendage is sensing omega-3 fatty acids in the diet, and that this signal is directly affecting how stem cells in fat tissue divide and turn into fat cells. Okay. The findings represent a missing link between two worlds, that of dietary science and that of molecular and cellular biology. And then it goes on to talk about how this works. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell. One more reason why we in the alternative movement, and there are tens of millions of us, are on the right side of the future, and the others are still trying to get their Nobel Prize by finding a drug that can be patented and marketed when it's already there. Also from University of California, San Francisco, as well as Glasgow University, high-fat diets, that's your average American diet. That's what the average teenager eats. That's what the average young person eats. That's what the average millennial eats. Is linked to depression-like behavior. Okay, what exactly do they mean? Research from the university, both universities, investigated whether obesity is a causative factor for the development of depression and the molecular pathway linked to these two disorders. Their results were published in the journal Translational Psychiatry. And they found that obesity is indeed associated with an increased risk of depression. I would go further. My studies have shown that it's also linked at lower levels to depression. Don't have to have the high levels. And also that they found that the HFD selectively induced the accumulation of palmitic acid in the hypothalamus and suppresses 3-5 cyclic protein kinase and increase the concentration of fatty acid receptor 1. In lay language, when you're on a high-fat diet, you're not having a normal metabolism process, and that can affect behavior. So, once again, all the manufacturers, all the media, all the scientific community, all the medical community, all of the population, all the regular dietitians, nutritionists, who said, the American diet's good, in moderation, everything's good. No, it's not. You're all wrong. And those that you were mocking and ridiculing and jealous of because they had the discipline and the intent to become knowledgeable about what they were not is better than your intentional neglect, which led to intentional ignorance, which led to obesity and diabetes and heart disease and death. That doesn't mean we're going to have any immediate shift in consciousness. That's not going to happen. Can't happen. But it does mean for those who choose to think independently, go on a healthy plant-based diet and lose the weight, and you're going to live a longer life. Also, one last one I'll share up with you today. A vegetarian diet does not compromise athletic performance. Arizona State University. So, if you're a vegan or vegetarian, don't feel that somehow you're going to end up with a limited aerobic capacity, because that is not the case. And there's been increasing interest in meat-free diets in recent years. There's a new film out with Arnold Schwarzenegger and that he produced, and it showed all these world-class athletes who are vegans and doing terrific. And I remember when I was a vegan, clear back at the beginning of coming into New York City, and I would do athletics, and people said, you don't eat meat? Well, how do you keep your muscles? And I would, explain to them that it's not the meat that gives us the amino acids. It's the amino acids are building blocks of proteins, and they're in all types of food, nuts and seeds, legumes and seaweed. So it's just understanding how to get the maximum amino acids. And then the egg project that I did as a scientist, the Institute of Applied Biology, that showed that, improved it scientifically. And so you do not have to ever eat any animal proteins ever in your life to be ideally healthy. In fact, you will live longer on a healthy Mediterranean or vegan plant-based diet than if you're a meat eater. All the scientific literature, and when I say all of it, I mean all of the scientific literature, shows that a healthy plant-based diet does everything for your heart and your lungs and your brain, and an animal-based diet has nothing but disease behind it. And yet you wouldn't know that based upon the National Institutes of Health and the Surgeon General and all of our health agencies that do nothing to challenge the commercialization of our food and the unhealthy diet that we live by. So, and you don't need all that protein anyhow. It creates ammonium and urea, which someone said is non-toxic. Really? Ammonium is not toxic? What course in biochemistry did you take? Got any fish? Got a koi pond? Well, don't aerate the and don't put charcoal in the water and see how long your fish live because of ammonia buildup. Wow, and that was the guy on NPR. That was unfortunate that they're not better educated. Plant compounds can boost your brain function in older adults. University of Georgia, meaning the same compounds that give plants and vegetables their vibrant colors, might be able to bolster brain functioning in older adults. So that's what they tried, and that's what they found. And that's good. That's why you want your blueberries and lemons and red sweet peppers. You want purple plums, red grapes. You want fruits and vegetables with high color. Oh, by the way, University of Michigan just brought out a study on how cinnamon turns up the heat on fat cells. That's good. You can put that in your smoothie in the morning. We are 21 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. When we come back from our break, I just was told we have someone on the line. So we're going to take a break, come back and speak with Jesse in studio in New York. And someone else is on the phone calling in. We'll see who it is. Please stay with us.
Dancing. She's a dancing machine.
Let's go into our studio and say hello to Jesse. Jesse is up there in New York running PRN for us. Hi, Jesse.
Hello, Gary.
What would you like to share with the audience, please?
I just want to share with the audience a new feature on the Progressive Radio Network's website, and you'll see it actually right on the home page where it says today's articles. Now, if you click on that, that's a new feature that we have where you'll be able to read along with the articles that Gary is reading on his program. And it's the articles where you can get pretty much every day, daily new progressive health, climate, all new articles from the big names that we get, like John Whitehead, Robert Reich, Chris Hedges. So it's going to be a real news dump of information that everyone's looking for.
Good, because a lot of people have told me that they don't want to go any longer to the mainstream media because it's so biased. And so we select information based upon its truth, not its bias. We do not promote ideologies or politics here. We're just looking for the truth. So now you do have a place to go each day, and you'll see videos on different topics. You'll see Lee Kant. You'll see Jimmy Dore. You'll see wonderful pictures of animals and nature. I select all those. And then Richard Gale selects a lot of the articles from around the world. So you'll find out what's going on in Africa or the Ukraine. The real story, not our sanitized, blanderized, pasteurized, and manipulative stories in American media. So you now have a whole news outlet every day, and it's refreshed and added to throughout the day, 24/7. I look at it before I go to bed at midnight, and I look at it when I get up in the morning, and we put new stuff up every 24 hours, all day, sometimes 100 stories in a day. And these are not stories you're going to read in the mainstream media. We don't even use the mainstream media any longer because it's so unreliable and so biased. So thanks for putting that together, Jesse.
No problem, Gary.
So again, tell people how to go to it each day.
Yeah, so you're going to want to go to the PRN.fm website. You'll scroll down a little, and you'll see today's articles. And you click that link, and that will bring you to the page.
Great. Okay. Right. And who do we have on the phone? We have someone? ISIL. Hello, ISIL.
Hello, Gary.
What would you like to share with us?
When I first met you, Gary, you helped me reverse end-stage breast cancer, but I'm not calling to talk about that. I'm calling to talk about my daughter, Michelle. She's 16 years old, and she was having seizures since the age of 3. She was a normal birth, and she was developing quite advancedly as a baby. At 9 months old, she was walking, and by the time she was 2 years old, she was speaking in 3 to 5 word sentences. At 2 and a half, I was teaching her letters and how to read. So I decided to put Michelle into preschool. And before I could enroll her into preschool, I was told that she would have to be updated on her vaccinations, plus take a flu shot. In September, I enrolled her into preschool and got her flu shots and her vaccinations. Within a week or two, she caught the flu, and they prescribed her Tamiflu. 2 weeks later, I was at work, and a woman called me and told me that they found my daughter unconscious. And proceeding after the ER visit, Michelle kept on collapsing, and I was never really experienced with seizures. We went to Akron Children's Hospital for a week straight of her collapsing, and at that time, the doctors would just run tests, do CAT scans, MRIs on her, and then send us home and saying that they couldn't find nothing wrong with her. Finally, one time, she had a seizure in front of one of the ER doctors, and the doctor said that, I guess she's not faking it, which really upset me, because that doctor was basically calling me a liar, my daughter a liar, or saying that I have Munchausen disease, which is not true. So they, at this point, they admitted us, kept us for a week, and prescribed Michelle to be on 5 different medicines to control what was diagnosed as, at this point, as epilepsy. As soon as they started administering the drugs to my daughter, she pretty much became a zombie. She was very lethargic, lack of appetite, no eye contact, and she couldn't verbalize her wants, needs. When she turned 5, she was having more seizure activity, and the doctor was upping on her Depakote, and she upped on her Depakote so bad that my daughter couldn't take a glass of water to her face because she was shaking so bad. At this point, I'm now researching to try to find another doctor that's going to try to help me and my daughter, and I find one with 30 years of experience, and he starts bringing in other doctors to look over my daughter because he cannot find anything medically wrong with her of why she's having seizure activities. The 3 doctors came up with their own diagnosis, and in the meantime, put Michelle on 15 different drugs to control the seizures. One doctor said that her brain wouldn't go into the REM mode. One doctor said it was head trauma. And another doctor just called it basically epileptic. None of these meds were controlling her seizures. She was never seizure-free.
How many seizures would she have a day?
Her seizures mostly were in the nighttime during her sleep, and she would have between 10 to 30 a night.
Every night?
Yes.
For years? ISIL? Is ISIL still there? Did we lose the connection? Okay, well, we'll ask her just to hold on. I'm interested in where this is going. In the interim, let us go to our original article today, which is posted now. Please share this with everyone you can. Also, please share this with every member of Congress. Share this with your state attorney generals. Share this with everyone you know, because we're dealing with hundreds of millions of people being adversely affected by what is on Wikipedia concerning alternative and complementary medicine. We've written 65 articles and letters to Wikipedia about Wikipedia, and now their lawyer threatened our lawyers. Oh, it's funny. And said, don't you ever send another article or letter to our board of directors or Jimmy Wells. Why? Truth hurts? Well, freedom of speech, you know, every time you challenge our lawyer, I'll write 10 more articles. Okay? That's the deal. So let's see if you can get around that issue. This article is entitled, Senior Wikipedia Editors Recommend That the Site Be Euphonized. That's their words, not ours. Last year, a senior administrator and editor on Wikipedia questioned the encyclopedia's usefulness and proposed that Wikipedia, quote, was on its deathbed and that euthanasia is the best option in this case, end quote. The editor, his name is Michael Hardy, noted that at one time, Wikipedia, quote, was impressive even while lots of confused apes wandered about chaotically. Then it reached a mature phase and functioned in orderly fashion for some years. Now dishonest, cowardly bullies sanctimoniously preach about civility while bullying their betters, bullying honest participants, bullying knowledgeable and erudite participants, bullying generous participants, and the bullies have now achieved dominance. Maybe the culture will change so that it can be reincarnated someday. Or maybe something better will succeed it in the future, end quote. That was made on August 28, 2018. Ah, he's not alone. We found another editor, similarly, feeling the same way. Quote, I agree with Michael with the way Wikipedia is going. The project is doomed anyway. Good editors are bullied out, bad ones are catered to, and the signposts and wicked projects are dead. So is RFA, whatever that is. Just put it down, end quote. That was on August 29th, 2018. But not to be outdone, guess who also weighed in? Didn't think we'd ever find this. We did. Quote, Wikipedia's founder Jimmy Wells responded, It's worth remembering that Michael is one of the most prolific members of the community and has been around for years. It's really worthwhile to consider what sequence of events led to this disruption and to also recognize that long-standing, trusted, and valued community members who are feeling this hurt and upset may actually have a point worth hearing. End quote. Whoa. So, Jimbo, you're suggesting that there might actually be a point worth hearing. End quote. Jimmy Wells. August 28th, 2018. All right. In that series of communications that the public did not know about, and that's behind the scenes, when Michael Hardy was on to this, well, who are these bullies? Are these the skeptics? Who are they bullying? And what about all of us who've been bullied? What about all of us who never put our biographies up on Wikipedia voluntarily? Deepak Chopra, myself, Rupert Sheldrake, and hundreds of others. And we can't change anything. You say you can, but we found you can't. So I would like to see someone quote on this. And yet, here is the other side of this. Aside from that, Wells is largely silent and continues to follow his hands-off policy. That policy allows editors to battle it out. Another editor, whose personal bio indicates he is part of the skeptic community, which dominates much of Wikipedia's content on non-conventional medicine and controversial subjects, piped in, quote, Wikipedia has exposed their actions as immoral, illegal, illogical, pseudoscientific, and that attempts by these groups to edit articles are prevented by users enforcing anti-POV policies. It's also the reason why it's banned in countries that want to maintain strict control of their populations, end quote. All right, that's a pro-skeptic person. This accurately restates our experience and a deep concern we have expressed during the past 2 years regarding factions that have hijacked large segments of the encyclopedia and use it for personal, ideological, and political reasons and to discredit those they disapprove of. In fact, behind the scenes on Wikipedia's talk and notice board pages, exchanges can be very vicious and libelous. It is not uncommon to read altercations between editors accusing each other of libel in efforts to protect a page that abandons reason, objectivity, and fairness. In a heated editorial war over whether an entry on ancestral health should be deleted, administrators who were determined to rule the Paleolithic diet as pseudoscience were charged with libelous language towards authors of scientific papers supporting this dietary regime. There were also charges of misinterpreting the science in favor of their subjective claims. One editor identified the problem of cherry-picking medical research in order to favor a prejudiced stance similar to many of Wikipedia's entries for other non-conventional medical therapies. Quote, "This raises questions about the way research is conducted on health and nutrition. It seems that too much weight is put on research involving Western-style diets, without questioning whether all Western-style diets may actually cause heart disease. There should still be plenty of room to write a good article about this subject, as there is evidence for the general claims made, published in reliable journals," end quote. Another editor, by defending the scientists being quoted in the Ancestral Health page, exemplifies the extent of disputes frequented on talk pages. Quote, "It is absolutely true that you personally attack those six users. Apart from the original allegation, you also call them, quote, deeply dishonest, end quote, among other things, on your talk page. Therefore, I have removed that section as a personal attack. I did that instead of the alternative action, which would have been to block you again. Please stop flinging accusations at other users, or that will be the eventual outcome," end quote. It is certainly within Wikipedia's means to remove libelous language from pages. Senior Administrator Hardy adds, quote, "Listen carefully. Deleting material because it's identified as libelous is standard procedure on Wikipedia and happens daily," end quote. September 4th, 2018. All right, so there we have it. So how about removing all the libelous misinformation on hundreds of pages of people who did not write a bio, people who are hateful towards them, wrote negative bios filled with lies, and then didn't allow any edits? No, you can't do that. I see. So if you wrote on some other topic and you were found to be libelous, that could be removed. But if anything involving chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathy, traditional Chinese medicine, energy medicine, complementary and alternative medicine, those things, no. No, whatever they throw against you to publicly shame you, to put you in a stockade for the public of hundreds of millions weekly to demean you, that's acceptable. To the skeptics, Jimmy Wales, yes. Yet removing a page can only be done if the editors in control are objective and hold no personal ideology outside of the encyclopedia's original mission, which is to reach a consensus of fairness. And this is not the case for pages on alternative health. Our research indicates that many of the leading administrators who have destroyed Wikipedia's credibility when dealing with medical subjects espouse the skeptic dogma. And it is no secret that believers in modern skepticism have waged a ferocious campaign to falsely discredit all alternative medical practices and portray them as a risk to public health. Unfortunately, Wikipedia's co-founder is a skeptic himself. Isn't he the one who claimed that people like homeopaths are lunatic charlatans? Well, how then do you abide by your own rules, Jimmy? And what advice do your lawyers give you? And the board? Where there is any balanced person who says you can't start off with your own personal bias and then gang up on people that you know nothing about, have no science background, have never done a clinical study. And yet that is what is done on a daily basis. This is only a small sampling of what goes on behind the curtain and out of public view. There are numerous additional examples. Editorial chaos runs so deep that the majority of Wikipedia senior editors who once held idealistic views of the encyclopedia, bringing the accumulation of human knowledge to the world, are no longer contributing to Wikipedia. What remains among senior administrators are many ideologues who have found a global platform to advance ulterior motives. Increasingly, Wikipedia has become a savage, socio-political motivated project rather than a depository of reliable information and knowledge. For example, it is our opinion that no respectable encyclopedia, such as a real encyclopedia, Encyclopedia Britannica, or Bartleby, or the Columbia Encyclopedia, or Scholarpedia, etc., has permitted fringe movements such as modern skepticism and the new atheism to create and define specific categories under the headings of pseudoscience, quackery, and fringe science and fringe theories. This is the language commonly used by skeptics, not by scholars or experts writing in a legitimate and reliable encyclopedia. Once such derogatory labels are accepted and institutionalized as legitimate, as has Wikipedia, the doors open wide for accusing any therapy, any theory, any medical practice as nonsense, as well as those who advocate such theories and practices. And that's what they've done. Now, have they ever visited Dr. Jonathan Wright's office? Have they interviewed the tens of thousands of his patients whose diseases that Jonathan has reversed? No. Have they attended any one of my 41 clinical studies, many published in peer-reviewed journals, and invited before prestigious groups of scientists to present to tens of thousands of people over the years as scientists? No. Did they ever once come to the Institute of Applied Biology in 33 years to come up to the third floor laboratory and see my work on defining the amino acid principle that vegans have all the amino acids they need equal and better than meat, which radically changed the whole principle of meat three times a day or animal proteins in a person's diet? No. Have they ever sat across from terminally ill patients who had tried everything medicine had to offer and were sent home or to hospice care who now are sitting across from me and years later alive and well with no disease? No. Yet they're the experts with no background, no clinical studies, no individual counseling, no peer review publications, nothing positive to contribute to the larger body of knowledge, nothing constructive to show how we can live longer and better lives, and all fully supported by the peer review literature? No. And then they remain anonymous? So we don't know who they are and what their background is and what qualifies them to be a skeptic or a critic or to edit people's pages? And yet they impugn the reputations of outstanding men and women in the healing field? This is a disgrace. We may ask the question, is it possible that Wikipedia is one of the most dangerous projects to have been launched on the planet? Certainly there is much valuable information and knowledge on Wikipedia, that I acknowledge, as long as it's not socially and politically contentious subjects that have a direct impact upon the public. The scandal is that we have found no evidence that the Wikipedia Foundation takes any responsibility for the misinformation and libelous accusations found on its pages. There is no system of deterrence. Unlike normal politics, there is an implicit deterrence factor of two or more parties calling each other out in legislative battles and in the courts of law. In those courts of law, if you're accused, you're allowed to defend yourself. You're allowed to know the full background, and all exculpatory information and evidence is allowed to be presented. You're allowed to make your case before a group of your peers. And if you don't like the outcome, you can appeal. That is proper jurisprudence. So how is it that Wikipedia abides by none of that? However, the Foundation's apparent failure to protect those who are subjected to scorn, undue prejudice, deception, and gross misreporting is simply business as usual, and people's reputations and livelihoods are injured and even destroyed with impunity. Some senior Wikipedia editors believe they can act above the law and act with extrajudicial hubris. Anonymous skeptics function collectively as judge, prosecutor, and jury and act unilaterally on their own whims. For years, permitting editors to remain anonymous rather than being required to register their real identities and resumes of expertise has been hotly debated on Wikipedia pages. Inevitably, honest editors argue in favor of registration and full transparency and complete acknowledgement of a person's credits and credentials in a given field. Once again, as stated earlier, if you're a person that needs a therapy, would you go to a person with no qualifications in the field to offer that therapy? How would you know what their qualifications are? We don't know what the qualifications of most of these skeptics are. Everyone should be known by their right and legal names and have their full background so they can be referenced and researched. Jimmy Wells continues to side with those who want to keep their identities and background, if any, secret. Why, Jimmy? Consequently, many health-related pages are written and edited by people with no expertise or experience in the medical and health fields and do so for the sole purpose of defaming alternative medicine and ruining the lives of its leading voices. How do we know? We have your actual words, the editors, on their talk pages, and we see the vitriol. We see the hatred. It's there. Why would anyone with a serious life-threatening health condition visit an electrical engineer, plumber, or computer nerd for diagnosis and treatment? Obviously, they wouldn't. But for the countless people and patients who visit Wikipedia in search of accurate health-related advice, they are unknowingly being propagandized by ignorant, unqualified, and biased individuals. That's our opinion. For this reason, it is not simply that Wikipedia is an unreliable medical resource, but it's morally corrupt by enabling anonymous skeptic bigots to wrongfully and perhaps even criminally mischaracterize alternative medicine as quackery and therefore to be avoided at all costs. In conclusion, Jimmy Wells has enabled skeptics to act as if there is no consequence for their words and actions by hiding behind the Internet Decency Act. Wikipedia is the perfect example for why this act needs to be eliminated. And therefore, understand that we have rogue internet giants like Wikipedia, Google, Facebook, and Twitter that should be held fully legally accountable in courts of law when they overstep free speech to personal attacks and character assassinations. Although we fully support free speech, law should not protect the executioners of slander, libel, and malice from being brought before a judge. Thus far, at least up till today, Wikipedia has managed to escape such a fate. Tomorrow is another day. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Well, we have ISIL back on. Sorry we lost you there. Please continue, and if you could, just please pick up the pace of your talking, all right?
Okay. When Michelle turned 12 years old, her neurologist basically told me he didn't know what else to do for me or my daughter. And so I asked him to send us to Cleveland Clinic. And every year since Michelle was 3 years old, when we go into the hospital to meet any new doctor, they'll keep us for a week. They'll do EEG, video monitoring, MRI, CAT scan. She'll talk to a psychologist, psychiatrist, and then they'll come up with a new plan of what drugs they would like to put her on or take her off of. And a lot of the drugs' side effects could be anger, make you violent, seizures, suicidal. And we went to Cleveland Clinic when she was 12. And at the age of 15, I changed our diets after meeting you and getting my own protocol. And I seen little optimistic hope, positive changes inside of Michelle and her seizure activity decreasing and her appetite increasing. And when Michelle turned 16, I was taking away all kinds of sugar out of our diet. And at that point, Michelle was on 15 different meds. And she said she jumped out of her third-story bedroom window in June saying that she was after a root beer float. And that's when I got a hold of Luann to get a hold of you to get a protocol for Michelle. And I implemented the protocol in June of this year. In July, we went into Cleveland Clinic for our 1 year EEG video monitoring, and at this time they have now pulled in a team of seven doctors to come up with a plan for Michelle. But at this point, after our week stay in Cleveland Clinic, they could not find a medical reason why Michelle was having seizures. They ran many tests. They even ran trial MRIs on her to see if they could see something that was the matter with the brain. And they took 15 vials of blood, because at this point, they saw a significant decrease of Michelle's seizures. And they was very impressed that with me implementing the protocol to Michelle, the decrease of seizure activity. And since we've been on the protocol, Michelle has been seizure-free. She keeps eye contact with you. She is alert. Her weight is coming back. Her attendance at school is so much better. Her grades are coming up. And we're slowly decreasing off the meds. When we left Cleveland Clinic, she was on three different meds. When we walked in the door, she was on 15. And we're still decreasing off of the seizure medicine.
And so let me just summarize here.
Go ahead.
So she was on 15 medicines, being seen by seven doctors for a period of about 14 years with no improvement, and having between 5 to 30 seizures a night. Since being on the protocol, she has zero seizures, not a single seizure in the last, 5 to 6 months?
Yes.
And after taking 15 vials of blood and doing every test for a week at the Cleveland Clinic, they can find nothing wrong with her now.
Absolutely nothing wrong with her.
Go ahead.
I asked them several times if this could have been from the vaccinations, if this could have been from the medicine, if this could have been from the Tamiflu, and none of them could give me an answer on that one throughout the 13 years that she's been studied by the doctors.
So now you're down to just a couple, two or three medications, and cutting those out so you'll be out of them altogether. But as of today, the doctors say, lo and behold, we don't know why, but your daughter's normal again.
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. And you no longer have any cancer in your body after being end-stage cancer. You're still cancer-free?
Yes, we are 2 years cancer-free. Thank you, Gary.
Good. Okay, Isol. Nice to hear from you.
Thanks for having me on. Bye.
Oh, and by the way, to the skeptics who are listening right now from Wikipedia, that's what we understand, wrap your head around that. See if you can figure that out. Are you going to say it's a placebo, didn't happen? Well, the medical records are there. Seven people at the Cleveland Clinic, very respected institution, saves a lot of lives out there. They do good work. Now she's free of all disease and no seizures whatsoever for a long period of time. And the woman yesterday, Elena, who wrote me that letter, reached out. We found her. She's very ill, but she is still alive. I'm glad to hear that. And Luann found her, and I spoke with her today, and I said, it's time now that we get you down here, and I'll work with you. And she's looking now. She can't fly, so we're going to need to get someone to drive her down. But if I can get her down here, I can save her life. That I will do. So maybe someone in the audience would like to drive a woman down and help save a life. That's what we do. We help save lives. Unfortunately, that idea is not shared. And on Monday, I'm going to put up a new video showing you all the different people, not all the people, but a lot of people who had full-blown AIDS, who are completely well, no HIV, no AIDS. And I'm not the one saying this. The investigators, the physicians, the scientists who worked on these cases using my protocols are saying it. We've never done this before. One of the people in the audience put all this together, by the way. Took a lot of work. They had to get all kinds of clips from different places, news services. But they did it. They did their homework, so you'll have a chance to benefit from it. Wonder how they're going to put their mind around that, continuing the libel that I'm an AIDS denier when I'm the only person that I know of on the planet to ever cure AIDS. Yeah. You'll hear it. You'll see it. You can read it for yourself. Have a nice day, everyone.